Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Sid, I've been in a remarkably good mood today.
When
you're somebody who, you know, never quite knows where their head's going to be at because chemicals and everything, the world is so nice. And I'm hoping.
It's nice for those around you, too.
Do people like that, too? The people in the house like that? Just different people that live here.
Listen,
all the time.
I get bored easily. I love unpredictability.
Yeah. That's,
you know, so it works for us. I never know what I'm waking up to. It works for us.
This one's good. I'm in a good vibe, and I am hoping that you are going to keep me on this radiation vibe I'm grooving on by just keeping the good vibes coming. Well, what do you got this week, Sid?
I don't know.
Pretty excited about it.
Well, okay, this isn't bad vibes because, you know, it's funny. As I was researching this topic and putting this episode together, the narrative got better. It's like better news.
Oh, good.
I wouldn't say like everything's fixed, don't worry, but like
they heard you were looking into it. And they're like, quick, Sydney's coming.
You know what's funny? I think I can admit this to you, dear listeners. Like you've been with us so long. I think you know my heart and you understand this. So as I was putting this story together and I'm thinking like, this is good. This is important. This is an important thing. I want to do an episode on it. I want to talk about it too. I want to also, you know, research some of the backstory of this and like get that info out there because it's really important for us to be focused on and energized about and talking about. And then as I was researching it, this actually happened in our notes. It happened to me in the moment, but like yesterday now, as we're recording, it sort of came to a resolution and that's great. I mean, excellent. But also I had a moment of like, no, not yet.
I need to be able to take credit.
No, it wasn't that. It was just like, no, I want to talk about it too. No, don't. It got fixed too quick. I didn't get to help. I wanted to help too.
Well, if I know anything about the medical system, the underlying issues are probably still absolutely there.
They are. The underlying issues are still there. And it's, as with most activist causes, sustained like pressure on organizations to do the right thing is really important. Even if it seems they're starting to do the right thing, you can't take your eye off them because, you know, and we're talking about Big Pharma here, and Big Pharma is really tricksy. And they have lots of lawyers. This is no shade on you lawyers. I'm just saying they have lots of you. They have lots of lobbyists. They have lots of people who are very good at protecting the interests of Big Pharma. That's what they're paid to do. That's their job. They're very talented and skilled and intelligent, and they will outwile us if we're not paying attention. So anyway, I want to talk about beta quiline and drug patents. Many of you may be familiar with this because of either John Green or Hank Green, because I think John first started talking about it, I believe, on Twitter. See, I feel like that now that
we're missing the narrative.
I know. Yeah. I miss narratives now.
Everybody
that
get
I
off
don't
Twitter.
Really,
come on.
I don't know where we go. Okay, do it, MySpace?
I guess.
Live Journal?
I guess.
I don't know. But I feel like I was late to this because I don't really look at Twitter much anymore. But anyway, I think John called attention to it first, and then of course Hank too. Many of you are probably fans of the Green Brothers, as you should be, as we are. But what John was talking about is that there is a medication, beta quiline, that is used for tuberculosis, a specific kind of tuberculosis. We often use the abbreviation MDR-TB. TB is the common way to refer to tuberculosis. Yes. I think most people know that. TB. When I say TB, I mean tuberculosis. MDR means multi-drug resistant. So it's TB that's really hard to treat. That's the important part.
Okay.
It's the same, by the way, I think it's always important. I always try to tell patients this. If I think something is MRSA or MRSA, that's just a really resistant strain of staph. So it's a staph infection. You may have heard of staph infections. They're really common. This is still just staph. It's just a really resistant form of staph, meaning that we have to use different antibiotics to fix it.
Makes sense to me.
Same idea, but generally same bug. There's differences, but generally same bug. So same idea. So this medication is really critical because with MDR-TB, you don't have a lot of options to treat it. And you need something that's a pill because a lot of the parts of the world that are really affected by TB, it can be hard. Like the delivery of healthcare can be more difficult because we're talking about resource limited settings or rural settings where it can be hard to get like injections or IV meds out to people. You need stuff that travels easily. And the reason that John Green drew attention to it and that we're talking about it now is that this medication was about to come off patent this year.
Mm.
That's a big deal for medicines. This is something that is like a lot of us in healthcare will sort of track occasionally when there's a medicine that a lot of our patients want or one that we know works well and are trying to give to people. When it's first introduced, the drug company that makes it will patent it, right?
Right.
Because they want to make money off of it. And then, you know, the argument that they will always make, which is to some degree true, we spend a lot of money and time making it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we need a return on our investment. So they patent it to protect it so other companies can't make it. Other companies can't make the same thing and you can't make generics of it for cheap. So then basically they get a monopoly on it. They get to set the price and whatever they set is what you have to pay. And insurance companies may choose to cover it or not. For most of these drugs, when they're first introduced, the idea that you could afford them out of pocket is not realistic for the vast majority of Americans. And I know, by the way, this system can work differently in different parts of the world. I'm speaking primarily about the way the pharmaceutical industry operates in the United States of America. There are still these issues because pharmaceutical companies are multinational, you know, giants for the most part. The company that made this med, Johnson & Johnson, is also Janssen. It just depends on where you are, but... Anyway, so a lot of there are issues with the pharmaceutical industry in probably the entire world.
It's exactly like Mickey Mouse.
What?
Well, Mickey Mouse is supposed to enter the public domain, and Disney keeps fighting to keep Mickey Mouse out of the public domain because they want to hold on to him. 2024, Mickey Mouse theoretically enters the public domain, but it's just Steamboat Willie Mickey Mouse. So no gloves, no color. But if you want to draw a black and white Mickey Mouse, they can't stop you anymore.
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
So is the real, like the version of Mickey Mouse that we know today, what number, like trademark are we on?
What do you mean?
Well, you said that it's just the Steamboat Willie one.
Yes. It's not the number. It's not re-trademark. It's a elements of his appearance. So the gloves weren't in Steamboat Willie. They weren't in until like a year after. So 2025.
Then you could do
that version of Mickey Mouse, and he wasn't in color until 1935. So not
that's
until
when you can do that.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
No, this is a really good analogy for what I'm going to explain to you
about
drug patents. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
That the only Mickey Mouse you can use next year will be the Steamboat Willie Mickey Mouse. We're going to get to that. But that's a good analogy for this. Okay. So this drug, beta-quiline, was introduced in, first it was like mentioned, it was investigated all the way back in like 2004. In this country, in the United States, it was introduced in 2012. And it is a, you know, it's this blockbuster drug at the time. Like when it was introduced, it was a big deal because it treated this really resistant strain of TB. It was a pill. In case you're curious, it is a diuretic quinolone antibiotic, if you want to know what class of drugs it is. And basically the way that it works in TB is it blocks the synthesis of something called ATP, which is like energy for the tuberculosis bacteria, and then
you're,
it kills
you're
it.
So you're losing
it doesn't matter. The
pull
point
up,
is,
pull up,
the
Smurl,
important
you're
part
losing
is
them.
It kills TB that other drugs can't. And it was when it came out, it was the first new drug, I should say, for TB that had been introduced in over 40 years. So it was a huge deal when it came to the market. And a lot of people who were working to fight TB and try to, you know, eradicate TB in different parts of the world were really thankful that this drug was introduced.
And the people who are rooting for TB and trying to get it spread everywhere, they were very frustrated. Ah, not again. We're just making some headway.
We're trying to give everybody TB. Dang. Well, I mean, I guess it's just TB at this point. It was on the other side. Like, tuberculosis itself was upset.
Yeah, sure.
If it has, like, a... If it's sentient
It probably has a few boosters. There's people that watch, like, NCIS. You know what I mean? I don't see why there's not people that cheer for tuberculosis.
I don't think those... I don't think you can draw a corollary
there. Ben Shapiro has fans. Why can't tuberculosis have fans?
There you go. That's where I would put TB. Yeah. Right alongside Ben Shapiro. So anyway, and I know, like, in that story, okay, so TB largely affects parts of the world where there's resource limited, people are living in impoverished settings. So you could start to see, like, Johnson & Johnson in this scenario as, like, and there hadn't been a new drug introduced in 40 years. They took a risk, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could make that argument. Like, deciding that these are the people we want to focus on, this is the issue we want to address, and this is the drug we want to develop, knowing the patient populations aren't going to have, like, a ton of cash to pay for it. Like, you know, it's not like they made a new vanity drug, right? So, like, a lot – and that's – and the reason I'm saying this is that this is always the argument on the side of the pharmaceutical industry. We took a big risk. We made a med that you really needed. And it was first, like it took them like 8 years of development beyond all of the early stuff that led to the development of this drug.
Okay.
So, like, it is, I guess that is kind of a risk. Now, on the flip side, TB is a big deal. As of 2021, these are the last, like, stats that I found, 1.6 million people around the world died from tuberculosis. And it specifically affects some populations more than others. So, like, 187,000 of those people also have HIV. TB is the 13th leading cause of death worldwide, and it was the leading cause of it, like, of death infectious disease-wise. It was the number one infectious disease killer worldwide until something took its place.
COVID.
I imagine that in the coming years, TB will again reclaim that first position. So it takes more lives than HIV, AIDS, which I think we probably hear more and talk more about overall, at least in this country, than we do tuberculosis.
And even that, it's not that much.
Right, you know, exactly.
Not enough, at least.
So it is a giant problem. In 2021, 10.6 million people got sick with tuberculosis. And it is curable. By the way, so when we talk about how many people die of it, TB's curable. We can fix it. There also is a vaccine. Now, in this country, we don't get it, but it is something that you get depending on where you live. So it's preventable, and it's curable, and it's still killing this many people.
That's a question of will and resources, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It is a public health crisis that persists that we are not doing enough about as a global community.
So
there are entities addressing it aggressively. We should be doing more.
So this medicine coming off patent is going to be a huge boom,
exactly,
right?
Because the regimen for multi-drug resistant TB that was out there prior to beta-quiline being introduced required like 20 months or more of treatment, a combo of medicines, daily injections, and they had much higher adverse events related to those medications. So the previous regimen was difficult, dangerous, hard to deliver, effective, but, like, you know, not
right.
Efficient, not applicable to most people.
Got it.
Beta-quiline changed the game, but it was expensive. It was expensive as soon as it was introduced, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's a new med. And as Johnson & Johnson would tell you—
They want to make their nut.
And I think it's really important, like, pharmaceutical companies are pretty good about not saying that. That is true. I mean, it's capitalism. They're for-profit companies.
Yeah, this isn't
a charitable organization. Like, they're not, no. But they don't say that. What they say is, listen, we put so much money and time into this, time that we could have done other things. We did this. So all that money, we have to recoup that for the next big innovation.
We're really hurting.
Like, right?
We're really
like, that's the only way we can continue to innovate is if we make money to you know, encourage us to do so.
Yeah.
This is capitalism.
Yeah.
But here's what I would tell you about, and I want you to think about this as we talk about the patent battle that is maybe coming to an end right now. How much of Betaquiline did J&J pay for? Because when we talk about
who pills?
No, like in the whole cost of making it something that was approved and came to market, mm-hmm. how much did they put in? Because there are studies out there you can find. I found a 2020 study specifically asking who paid for this drug, whose money was spent in the development of this drug, meaning who should get to profit off of it, or how much should it cost? That's the bigger question, not who gets the profits. But depending on who paid for it, is it fair for them to charge as much as they do, for the markup on these drugs to be as completely wild as they often are? And by the way, those prices climb as they get closer to going off patent.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird. It's so weird. Mm-hmm.
So here's what you need to know about Betaquiline. Public contributions, meaning clinical trials that were funded by tax dollars or grants.
Okay.
Money that came from the taxpayers, okay?
You and I, Joe Worker.
So through public contributions, it was between $109 and $252 million. These are U.S. dollars. Tax credits were $22 to $36 million. Tax deductions were $8 to $27 million. Administration of a donation program was $5 million. There were PRV revenues that were $300 to $400 million. Total public investment in this drug was between $455 to $747 million.
It's our drug.
The J&J put in $90 to $240 million. So depending on, I mean, because all of this, it's hard to get the, nobody wants you to know the exact numbers. So either way, the public contributed at the low end 1.6 times as much money as the private company. On the high end, 5.1 times as much money. We pay for these drugs, everybody.
It's our drugs.
I'm not saying that the company doesn't also. I'm saying that the primary funder for medical innovation is us.
Yes.
We the people are paying for these medications. And then when we the people see them approved by the FDA, and then we can get them and we're sick and we're like, hey, I paid for that. Give it to me. They say it's going to be thousands of dollars and your insurance company won't cover it. Sorry. And this isn't just leveled at J&J.
Right.
All the and every company that we lauded for making a COVID vaccine and we were so cheering on our favorite big pharma. Remember, they all do this. So this isn't one company. They all do this.
Classic Sawbones is back. We're fighting again. We had a brief honeymoon with the drug companies when they were making COVID vaccines, mm-hmm. and now we're back on their butts.
So, and I mean, I think that the question is, how much money do you need to make off of a life-saving drug before you consider it worth your while to save lives? And I think this is hard because there are scientists, we said this with the COVID vaccine, there are scientists behind all this who I know don't feel this way, who I know aren't making this, who aren't sitting there in their labs for days and weeks and months and years perfecting these molecules, thinking, I'm going to make so much money. That's not what they're thinking.
Because they're not.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
And this is what sucks is if you break it down to any individual human in the chain, and you ask them about the morality of this, then they would probably say, oh, yeah, we should try to help people. This is the problem. Living in a capitalist system, they are not just encouraged but required to try to squeeze as many nickels out of everybody as they can. This is why people getting freaked out about AI drives me crazy. You know we've already been living under the tyrannical reign of an algorithm for years now. It's a bunch of humans serving this algorithm that will give them the most money. Like, we've been doing it, right? So no one is to blame other than, I mean, I'm sure there are people to blame, but the system is built for this. Like, this is what it's supposed to do.
I'm going to start calling you Neo if you keep talking like this.
Really? Like, from the Matrix? Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah, I could get down with that.
No, but I mean, what you're saying—
I know Kung Fu.
What you're saying is right.
I don't.
And also recognizing that a pharmaceutical company is not a single human. It's an amalgam of a bunch of different people who don't necessarily feel this way.
Extrapolate this out to housing developments, right?
Yeah.
Like, we have homeless people. You're building houses. Why can't you make them, like, so you make enough money to pay your people, and then also you put people who don't have homes in them. Well, because that's not the system. The system is we get as much money for it as we humanly can, and otherwise we're failing the system.
And we have a lot of intellectual frameworks that have been constructed around that to tell us that it's the right thing to do. But John Green called on this, and this helped turn the tide on this issue. There are lots of people who work for these companies who are good people who don't agree with this. And if you ask them, the problem is that the corporation gets to be a thing of its own in this society.
Right.
The corporation can have wants and needs and desires and demands, and it is much more powerful than us, the individuals.
Because it's a moral smokescreen that allows people to operate with moral impunity because they're serving this capitalist system.
It's, and things have moved far away from, like, I always think about Jonas Salk with the polio vaccine. He said he didn't patent it because he said, could you patent the sun?
Yeah.
We've moved a long way. Those people are still there.
Now there's people.
There are Jonas Salks there.
Yeah, but there's also people in the government who was like, can we patent the sun? Actually, that's a great idea, Jonas. Thank you so much.
I know. Anyway, so where does that leave us with beta-quinoline and the patent? Why? It was filed initially in 2003. Generally, patents last 20 years. Generally. It's 2023. It's time for it to end. So what's the beef? I'm going to tell you after we go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the
mouth. So there's a lot of stuff that medical TV shows can get wrong. But I know one of the most disappointing things for me when I started practicing is how uncomfortable conventional scrubs can be. They don't necessarily fit all body shapes really well, and they're scratchy. And that's until I found Figs. So our shifts in the hospital can be really long, or in the office, and you need scrubs that feel good, that fit you well, and they're going to last all day long. Figs makes scrubs for the medical professionals of today. They're not like a paper bag. They're not itchy. They feel great. They're so soft and comfortable. They're form-fitting. They're made for the kind of work that we actually do, where we're up and down, we're on our feet. Sometimes I'm sitting on the exam room floor checking out somebody's toenails, and I need to be comfortable while I'm doing it. They're antimicrobial, so you know that you're going to be protected. You can wash them every time you wear them, which is super important. I wash my scrubs, obviously, every day that I wear them. And they look good, so you can look like those cute TV docs and nurses that that made us go into medicine in the first place. You can check out tops like the Katarina and the Cade pants. It's an easy, relaxed fit, and then so many cargo pockets, which I can tell you that's the main thing we need, are pockets for our pens, pockets for our notebooks, pockets for my Narcan, pockets for everything. I love Figs. They are so comfortable. And with the work that I do, kind of unconventional out in the street medicine, I need something that feels good all day long. With back to school season upon us, it's the perfect time to stock up with some fresh outfits for the year. And Figs just dropped a brand new collection of limited edition styles and accessories. If you're in healthcare, or if you're shopping for someone who is, you can get 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX, FIGSRX.
I have really enjoyed experimenting with fashion thanks to Quince. Now, I know that sounds wild coming from me, Justin McElroy, a podcaster. Why, Justin, are you even wearing clothes? I hear you. But when I want to try a new look, what I love about Quince is they have a lot of different clothing items that are at a great price and are really well made. So if you want to try something, you're not sure if it's like, is this going to be the right fit for me? I don't know. Try it out with Quince. There's craftsmanship that you see in every detail of these clothes. I've bought several, like a pair of shorts I love, a pair of pants I wear literally every day. I mean, nearly every day, not literally every day. You know what I mean? Because there's some days you're just like, you can't. But I've been so happy with the pieces that we have gotten from Quince. And also there's a really wide variety of stuff. You know, there's silk tops, skirts for dressing up, denim for everyday wear. I don't mention a lot of the specific items because honestly, you shouldn't trust me about that part of it if it's outside my specific range of clothes for my body. But I will say this, for my body, Quince does right. sounds weird now that I say it like that. Find gifts so good you'll want to keep them with Quince. Go to quince.com/sawbones for free shipping on your order. 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/sawbones to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sawbones.
Hi, I'm Ketchup.
And I'm Socks.
And I'm Ball Bearings.
And I'm Pigeons.
And I'm Water Towers.
And I'm Cardboard.
Surprise, we're actually humans.
Humans making a podcast about those kinds of topics.
Because those are real episode topics on the podcast, Secretly Incredibly Fascinating. That's a podcast where we take ordinary seeming things like ketchup and socks and cardboard and bring you the little known history and science and stories that make those things secretly incredibly fascinating.
Secretly incredibly fascinating.
The title of the podcast. Hear the back catalog anytime and hear new amazing episodes every Monday at MaximumFun.org.
You want to hear a celebrity impression?
Where's the beef?
That's
oh,
the
that
lady.
Was good.
Where's the beef, lady?
That was a good one. I think
80s kids
I think.
Will love that.
Okay, so like I said, the patent should be running out this year. Everybody's very excited. Like I found a lot of articles like written last year that are like, it's a new era. Betaquiline's going off patent. We are so freaking excited. I love scientists who write that kind of stuff. I mean, like, it's a big deal for saving lives. And by the way, patents and exclusivity are two different things when it comes to pharmaceuticals, and they can run concurrently. You can have exclusive rights to a drug, meaning you can't have generics, and you can also patent a drug so nobody else can make it. And I don't know. But the important thing for this is the patent. Mm-hmm. They're all different rules, and I read them, and I wish I was a lawyer to understand them. Anyway, so J&J is fighting it because kind of like what you said with Mickey Mouse. This is a good analogy, okay?
Another life-saving.
Another life-saving pharmaceutical, Mickey Mouse. So in 2003, they patented betaquiline. Well, in 2007, J&J filed another patent on it for another piece of it. Because there's lots of different things that go into the drug itself, right?
Right.
There's like figuring out the active part that does whatever it does to the organism or in your cells or whatever. But there's like how you package it. There's how it gets into cells. There's the delivery mechanism. There's lots of different pieces to a pharmaceutical. And every one of those can be patented. So Steamboat Willie can be patented, but then when you add gloves, that can be patented. And then when you make him color, that can be patented. All that is true about medications. And when you patent a new part, a term that they use for that is evergreening, do you restart the patent clock, basically? Have you made it so now we're 20 years from 2007, which is what J&J has been saying. Oh, well, actually, we're going to honor this in 4 years because that's when the patent expires because right. of this other thing we did in 2007, which is legal, by the way. Like, they're not doing anything that isn't legal. This is legal. You can do this.
It's worth noting also that in Disney's case, they have fought and lobbied to change the law, the law to make it so that Mickey Mouse doesn't go into the public domain.
Well, and J&J is not doing anything that is illegal. Which shouldn't give them, I mean, that doesn't let them off the hook. What it says is who wrote the laws and whose interests were they serving. But, and I should just, by the way, there are TB activists mm-hmm. who have been trying to make this happen for a long time, who have been arguing these cases for a long time. Like, this isn't, we, all of us in the podcast and video and social media world who pay attention to these things and do our best to be science communicators and do our best to tell you about stuff, like, we are standing on the shoulders of giants who have been mm-hmm. doing this kind of work for a long time. And there was a huge global campaign in October of 2019 where Medicines Sans Frontières, which is Doctors Without Borders.
It sounds – don't you think it's better? Medicines Sans Frontières is so much better.
But they got together with TB activists, and they had this huge campaign outside all the J&J offices in the U.S., in South Africa, in Brazil, in Belgium, in Ukraine, in Spain, basically demanding that they lower the price of betaquiline to no more than $1 a day for patients with MDR-TB. So this has been happening for a while. Now all these activists demanding this doesn't always necessarily mean they change their minds. But that's what that has been building to this. And this happened, by the way, we've talked before about like the initial AIDS epidemic. These sorts of things happened, right? Demanding like people need these drugs. We can't wait. We don't care about your patent. 20 years is too long. Do you know how many people will die? Do you know how many people would die in the next 4 years if they maintain their patent?
How many?
6 million.
That's so many.
Mm-hmm. So how can you make more than one patent on a single medicine? That was a question I had. Well, we kind of talked about that. Like, you can patent different pieces of it. There can be novel stabilizers or capsule coatings, or like a good example is the delivery mechanism of albuterol. So a lot of you may use an albuterol inhaler if you have asthma or COPD or something like that, right? And it helps open your airways, this drug. It's old drug. The delivery mechanism of your little teeny inhaler, the little L-shaped thing that you squirt in your mouth, that changed at one point, mainly because we wanted to eliminate chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs that were used in the, you know, in the way that it squirts in your mouth. And when they changed that, they were able to extend patents. It's why albuterol inhalers have stayed expensive. Nowadays, they're finally generic, some of them. But like for a long time, I remember buying my patients their albuterol inhalers because they didn't have insurance. This is prior to the Affordable Care Act. And like the
Thanks,
cheapest.
Alana.
Yeah, literally, thank you. The cheapest that I could often get was between $40 and $50 for literally a life-saving inhaler for a drug that had been around for who knows how many decades. But anyway, so you can do that. So to give you an idea why beta-quilline isn't the end of this fight, the top 12 brand drugs on the market last year were protected by 848 total patents. It's an average of 71 per drug. That's 38 years without competition on average. So that 20 years is just like that's the opening offer from the patent office a lot of the times. Humira, which treats kind of arthritis and is a really important drug. And you can read, there are lots of articles about how Humira, they had 132 patents that were granted. And that was, I think, less than half of what they attempted to patent. I think they tried to patent over 300 different aspects of Humira and have made billions off this drug, by the way, that is absolutely essential for some people and they just cannot get access to. And they call these patent thickets, by the way.
Patent thickets?
Uh-huh. That's you create accurate. A patent thicket around your drug so that you can make as much money off it as possible for as long as possible. There's a patent thicket of 96 patents around Revlimid, which is a cancer drug. So that could, if they all hold, that's 40 years with no competition. Same with Lantus, which is a really essential insulin. A lot of my patients need it or use it, and it has 49 patents. So anyway, this is not just a J&J problem. This is a systemic problem. Now, the Green Brothers brought a lot of awareness to this. A lot of people on social media took notice. There was a lot of pressure on J&J to do the right thing, but I think this is all like, this is moral relativism, right? In this situation, the right thing is to let the patent expire. I think there's probably a better right that could have been done.
Right.
But we're past that point. So to do the right thing. This is in addition to all the pressure they were already getting from the global community for years now, right? This sustained pressure, this was sort of the tipping point. And Johnson & Johnson announced yesterday, that was Thursday the 13th, that they had granted Stop TB Partnerships Global Drug Facilities licenses that enable global drug facility to tender, procure, and supply generic versions of, the brand name for this is Sertoro. Or beta-quilline. For the majority of
sounds
low
like
and middle income
like
countries.
A scuba instructor, doesn't it? And I am Sertoro. I will be guiding you through the depths.
For the majority of low and middle income countries, including countries where patents remain in effect. So that sounds good.
Okay.
That sounds good. Hopefully that will play out like they say. Now, I always think like, I mean, they can supply generic versions for the majority of low and middle income countries, for the majority. So there's wiggle room in here. And I think that of course, is concerning. And so in response to that, as John Green pointed out, What we still need to get Johnson & Johnson to do is commit to this deal with the Global Drug Facility in perpetuity. Like, don't go back on it next year when you decide to file a new patent because you did something else or whatever, or because you decide to defend one. I mean, I don't know how many patents there are on bedaquiline. These are the two I know about. How many could there be?
And if you are going to do it, will you at least give Sawbones a heads up this time so we can get out in front of this thing and not leave the Green brothers to get all the credit? Really, guys? He hasn't done enough? John Green writes the best-selling book of that the year that Fault in Our Stars came out. Everybody loves Hank now because he's in an incredibly inspiring cancer battle. This is ridiculous. Let us get a hand on the ball, please. We're all trying our best here. The Green brothers are making coffee that funds, like, villages and stuff. Like, please, guys, leave a little bit of credit for the rest of us. Please leave some good works undone.
Should I admit, like, we are friends with the Greens. We like the Greens. This is a goof.
This is a step. Sid, keeping the TB drug generic is a step too far, Hank and John. You hear me? You've gone too far.
You've saved too many lives.
You saved too many lives and done too many good works. Leave something for the rest of us. And I'm a podcaster. This is as close as I get, guys. You got to give me something.
There are a couple other things, remember, in addition to the deal being in perpetuity, they need to give us a list of what countries do you mean? What do you mean the majority? Like, which ones? And who are you leaving off? And why? And I think that that's a little sketch. Publicly acknowledge, and this is the other part, any other patents, that this amounts to a functional abandonment of secondary patents on bedaquiline in countries with high TB burden. So that's the last piece of this that they really need to do, because otherwise they could, I mean, like I said, companies create these patent thickets, or they could just call on a different patent. I mean, the problem is, like, if you start making these generics and then they decide, like, okay, actually we only were giving you this deal for a year and it's over now, and now we're defending our patents again, they've got the weight, they've got the money, they've got the power, they've got the legal, you know, prowess. Like, they've got it. They can do that. They can stop you. And those of us who work in, like, healthcare activism or in these, like, medical nonprofits or these, yeah, I mean, like, there's only so much we can do to fight back. Now, you know who could fight back?
The Green brothers.
Well, obviously the Green brothers. Aside from the Green brothers.
Yeah.
The governments.
Oh, yeah. Forgot.
Why are pharmaceutical companies allowed to, you know, do this to us?
Yeah. So you're saying there's still more work to do?
Yes. I'm saying that that sustained vigilance, attention, outrage is necessary so that they don't go back on these things. So that they don't, and this happens a lot when a corporation comes under, like, a negative spotlight, is they'll do something quickly to try to, like, kill the noise. And then everybody goes, oh, yay, we fixed it. And then they move on to the next thing, right? Because that's the nature of, especially, like, with social media. What's the next thing? That's how we all are sort of trained.
So you're saying that the Greens left the job half finished?
No, I'm not
saying
that.
Pretty sloppy, guys. Guess it's time for Sawbones.
No, because John is the one that pointed out that we need to continue to demand these other things, because it's not enough to just stop there. We need more. And I don't know. I mean, I don't trust.
Green brothers. No. Me neither. Yes.
If a company, and this isn't even about trust, because I don't want to make this an emotional thing. If a company's goal is to make money, which it is, if you build a business that's for profit, what's your goal? Make money. I mean, like, that's intrinsically what it is. Like, you do whatever else you do, but, like, your goal is to make money. You know, you don't, like, sell pants because you are passionate about, you know, maybe you're passionate about pants, but, like, you hope to make money off the pants, right?
You've really got me with this metaphor. Please keep it going.
When in healthcare, my goal is never to make money. My goal is to take care of people. And so when the two start getting intertwined, people will get hurt inevitably because the companies are trying to make money. And those of us who need to get these drugs to the patients are just trying to save lives. Our goals are not the same. And sometimes they run at cross purposes because I don't care if you make money. Give me the freaking pills so people don't die of a curable disease in the year 2023, and people are not sentenced to die because they happen to be born in a part of the world with less healthcare resources or because they happen to be born impoverished. That is not the equitable society that we want to live in. And so healthcare cannot be left up to the capitalist free market.
Thank you so much for listening to our DSA podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. Go ahead.
Can I say one other thing? We've talked a lot about the Green Brothers, who, again, I would just like to reassert we are friends with.
Listen, you're out on your own on this one, okay?
And I would also like to say a lot of you wrote in and when Hank announced his diagnosis and asked us to talk about, you know, the type of cancer Hank has and all that. Here's what I would tell you. First of all, Hank, of course, is an excellent science communicator. And if you are not already following and listening to the various things Hank puts out in the world, whether YouTubes or TikToks or whatever, you should be, because Hank is doing a far better job than I ever could of educating people about what he's going through and what the implications of that are. I mean, and not just like his personal experience, but like the scientific ins and outs. He is doing I don't even have the words for it. An incredible job.
It's incredible. It is truly.
He's incredible. Made me cry many times watching the strength of going through it and describing it in great detail. There's no need for me to tell that story because he's doing it.
You can follow him. So. His TikTok handle is at the McElroy family. So go follow him right now.
Justin.
It's what America needs you to do. And well, I think the Greens will really appreciate it.
And of course, we all are thinking about Hank and wishing him the best. And
yeah. By the way, they're genuinely actually good human beings. If you know them in real life, they're as good as they seem. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to the taxpayers for using their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thanks to you, the people, for listening. We appreciate it so much. That's going to do it for us for this week. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.